ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, Corbin Middlemass here from ABC Cricket Podcast. There has never been a more anticipated Ashes series than the one going down this summer. Australia versus England is always huge, but this feels generationally massive. A crucial clash needs a comprehensive analysis. So check out ABC Cricket Podcast. Join me and ex-Australia opener Ed Cowan every Monday and Friday, as well as after every day of play for the best conversation in cricket. Search for ABC Cricket Podcast on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
2025 has been a big year for technology. We've seen the teen social media ban come into play. There's AI in everything, despite the talk of a bubble. And even, finally, robots doing housework for us, with the enthusiasm of a Labrador and the skill of a Labrador. We also saw huge breakthroughs in quantum computing, a wave of corporate shakeups, and big bets on the cloud and cybersecurity. The future is here, so let's take a look back at the year that was and have a guess at what's to come. This is your guide to technology and culture. My name is Ray Johnston, and this is Download This Show on ABC Radio National. Joining me to pull apart the year that was 2025, we have Cam Wilson, Crikey's associate editor and the writer of the Sizzle newsletter. Welcome back, Cam.
Hello, good to be here.
And Jennifer Dudley Nicholson, AAP reporter. Welcome back, Jen.
Thank you so much.
So let's get into it with what, in your view, from your perspective, has been the biggest technology story of 2025. Jen?
Has anyone actually been able to avoid AI this year? Because it's taken up a huge amount of my time and not necessarily just using it, just writing about it, talking about it, theorizing about it. So yes, AI. We started the year hearing about agentic AI, which was new and not necessarily picked up by all of the spell checkers that I've been using. Where okay. The tools would perform tasks on our behalf. And then now at the end of 2025, it seems that they still need really close supervision. So maybe we haven't completely fulfilled that promise just yet. And then we've seen Australia's approach to AI completely change within the year. So last year we saw the formation of a temporary AI advisory body, and then that got dismissed. And we saw towards the end of last year, there was a consultation about mandatory guardrails because they'd identify some places that AI perhaps shouldn't be used. And then this year we've seen something completely different. So we've now got a new AI body, and we're going to see how that works. It looks like we're taking an American approach as opposed to a European approach. And the government's come out recently with this national AI plan, which suggests that we're not going to get an AI act and an overarching law to rule them all. So it's been a big year for AI, I would suggest.
It has been a big year for AI, and I think we did come into 2025 with a lot of promises of what AI would be able to do by the time 2026 rolled around. And I'm looking back and I'm not seeing a whole lot of those promises realised. I have been accused of being a bit of a cynic when it comes to AI, and I will clarify that I do mean generative AI. I am well aware of the incredible applications of applied AI that have been happening for decades. I wonder what 2026 will hold for AI. Are we still going to be being promised agentic, do you think, Jen?
I think, yes, agentic is not going to leave us. And I've already seen some predictions for, you know, the massive things that agentic will do and take over and sort of make our lives easier in different ways in 2026. And I believe about a third of them, if you catch me on a particularly optimistic day. I'm keen to see, you know, what they come up with, and I'm scared at the same time. And I think that's where you have to be, right on that edge.
Cam, I think I can take a stab at it, but what's been the biggest technology story for you for 2025?
I'm giggling because, yes, I think anyone who has even potentially passed me in the street in the last year probably knows what I'm going to say, because I've been focusing on it a lot. Of course, what I think was the biggest trend of the year generally was the whole world's move towards a age-gated internet that people would most closely associate with Australia's teen social media ban that came into effect just this week. You know, like I think taking a step back, we've had the internet in people's houses like for about, you know, a quarter of a decade now. And in a weird way, it was kind of this blip in human history where for the first time, you know, you get mass communication media that wasn't restricted based on your age. Because like, if you think about it, there's restrictions about what you can show on TV or what times. If you want to go into a cinema, you might have to show your card for, you know, for M15 plus content. If you wanted to get certain kinds of magazines, they would be covered up or even put behind the counter in news agents. So, you know, for all this time, access to some kinds of information has been restricted based on age because, you know, as a society, we've decided that certain things are not appropriate for children. But the internet was kind of outside of all that. And then after, I think there has been pushes for things like this for really, I mean, as long as the internet has been around, and particularly over the last decade, over the last year or two, we've finally seen this actually come to fruition. Australia, in some ways, is at the front of this with specifically what we're doing, which is restricting access to teens to having accounts on social media. But the UK in July also kind of put in similar things for limiting access to non-social media sites and requiring digital providers to, for example, restrict certain kinds of content, even on platforms, to people who had proven their ages over 18. So it's not just Australia, it's happening all over the place. There are half of the states now in the US now have age gating or are supposed to get age gating on adult websites. It's really happening everywhere. And I think that's because of a combination of advances in technology, but also kind of changes in community attitudes and a growing feeling that as the internet and digital becomes, you know, such a big part of our lives that we can't really accept anymore that it's just a kind of wild, wild west out there that doesn't really care about what your age is.
When this ban was announced at around this time last year, it was announced with no real plan as to how it would be implemented. So we've spent the last 12 months seeing that evolve over time. Where are we at right now with how this is being implemented? Is there any kind of uniform standard across these sites?
Yeah, I think we have seen a coalescing around a standard. So yes, you're right that a year ago, the government said, we're introducing this law. We're saying you have to do this. And really this law was actually two things. It was saying, one, you have to raise your minimum age from 13 to 16. 13 was kind of the de facto standard across the industry, mostly based on the fact that that is the kind of US legal standard. But the second part of it, and this is the part that I think is really interesting, is that they're actually, the law then said, platforms, you actually need to enforce your minimum age. You actually need to do something or you'll face fines of up to $50 million. And what they've kind of coalesced around is really three things. One, using the data that they already have on you to figure out your age. That can be things as simple as you've had a Facebook account for 15 years, you're probably older than 16, all the way up to more sophisticated analysis of what you're posting online and what's being posted to you. So, you know, one of the examples that Meta, which owns Facebook and Instagram, gives is that, you know, if a bunch of people start commenting on your photo on Instagram, had a great time at your 12th birthday, that's going to send an alarm bell off, I guess, in Meta HQ in Mark Zuckerberg's office and say, this person might actually not be 65 as they told us. They actually might be younger. And so maybe we need some more proof.
I did see the advice going around for teenagers to start Googling things like back pain and superannuation funds to try to get around this.
I saw perimenopausal as well. So yeah, I mean, look.
Word of the year.
And I'm saying if they get that education, that's just a side benefit of it. But the two other ways that they kind of are using is mostly either using facial scans, and this is a real area in which we've had this advance in technology where these ability to quickly scan a picture or a short video of someone's face is getting better at being able to have pretty confident about how old they are, and of course like uploading actual government ID. And so, you know, that is now in force. Many people would have no idea that their age has been checked, you know, the data, the Meta or whichever platform has run the numbers and decide they're over 18. But some people have been surprised to find out that maybe their digital age doesn't reflect their real age and that they have to actually prove it in some way, or the other way around. Teens have been very creative in figuring about how to get around it, you know, whether it's putting on makeup, whether it's stealing their parents' physical ID, all these kinds of things to convince these platforms that actually they're over 16 and they should still be allowed on them.
It would be really interesting to be able to have some transparency around how these platforms age us. You know, kind of like how in the Spotify Wrapped this year, it told you what your musical kind of age was. It put me at 50, even though I'm only 43, which I think says something about my taste in music. You are listening to Download This Show on ABC Radio National. Ray Johnston here with you, and I am joined by Cam Wilson, Crikey Associate Editor and writer of the Sizzle newsletter, and also Jennifer Dudley Nicholson, AAP reporter. We're recapping the year that was 2025. And Jen, is there a story this year that we probably should have paid a little bit more attention to?
There's a lot. When we weren't talking about AI or age bands, I think there's a lot that kind of scraped through, but there's not in particular that I would like people to pay more attention to. I think it did get a lot of airtime, but at the same time, I think it's really important. And that was the 000 outages.
Yes.
So obviously this year, Optus had a giant 000 outage that lasted for far too long. People were not able to contact emergency services. It went on for hours, even though previously we've had an inquiry into the availability of 000. We had a sort of recommendations that there should be a commissioner in place to handle these complaints and to make sure that it was available. And due to a series of delays, none of those changes actually happened. And so this shouldn't have happened for a multitude of reasons. And we did get, I mean, we have heard about it, obviously. Optus came out and because they had an outage, obviously, the year before that was also quite memorable, but for different reasons. But in this case, people died because they weren't able to access 000. So we did see a lot of attention to it, but I think that's died off a little bit. And I think that it should frighten us all in an age where we think that we're connected all of the time. We're able to contact emergency services when we need them. And I think that going into next year, even we should be paying attention to this and all of those recommendations that have yet to be put into place.
Absolutely. I think we should all be able to rely on calling 000 and it reaches someone. Jen, in your opinion, is this something that should be a public service as opposed to a private one?
I think it should be. And I think that there were measures that were talked about. So if one network went down, that it would automatically route to another one, because this is more important than, as you say, like commercial interests. This is a public service. And so I think that, yeah, it's more important that any one company could control it. And I think when outages go on for that long, then yeah, that it needs to be escalated much more quickly than it was. And that was really concerning.
Cam, what story should we have paid a little bit more attention to, do you believe?
I think that the story of the year that has not been enough coverage is the beginning of the death of the open internet.
Oh.
This is downstream from AI, so it is part of, I think, a story that has gotten a lot of attention, of course, but I don't think enough attention has been given to the fact that we're seeing major platforms, in fact, some of them that really depend on the open internet and extracting a lot of value from it, are now putting things in place that I think really, really threaten it. What am I talking about? Well, think about it. If you use something like ChatGPT, if you use Google now, which has AI mode, even the kind of old school stuff that has been happening for a while in Google, where more and more, if you search a question, rather than going to a website, it just shows you a little box of information you don't have to click through. All of these services fundamentally are relying on this idea that someone else has done the work. We're able to, you know, automate grabbing it. We're going to cut out the work that you've had to do in the past, which is like, you know, type something into Google, get a website, click on the website, read it yourself. And then when you go to that website, the kind of deal has been implicitly often that you'll see some advertising that would support the production of that information, or even you're on someone else's website where they can show you other things, where they can burnish their reputation, where they can explain things like they want to. It's under, you know, their kind of control. Now this is kind of all being centralized in these, you know, chatbots, which are the ones that are getting the benefits. You know, when you search something in ChatGPT that maybe you pay for, or maybe I guess VCs have paid for, and maybe you'll pay for through ads in the future, that information actually got produced by someone else, but all that value is going to ChatGPT now because you're on their platform, you might be paying them. And I think, like, while that is clearly what users seem to like, to be 100% clear, like when I search, you know, what time is Download This Show on, and it pops up without me having to click, it says, this is the time. That is awesome for me as a user. I actually don't want to click through. Like, sorry, no offense to the good ABC, the good people at the ABC who do the job of designing the websites, but it's great if I just have to take one less click. But in that process, I've taken away that kind of arrangement that we had that justifies why we make websites at all. And that sounds like, you know, that kind of sounds like a kind of throwaway line. But if you think about it, if people stop going to websites, if the only thing that's visiting websites is these chatbots crawls, which is the kind of, you know, tool that they, the robots that they use to look at websites, get its information and put it into their, you know, AI models, then it soon becomes a really like important question, like, why would I bother having a website at all? Because not only am I not getting the benefit because no one's actually visiting it, but I'm also actually having to pay for the hosting, like the cost of maintaining that information when these chatbots, robots are coming and taking my data. Like that actually costs me. I've got to run the servers that can deal with those requests. So it costs me. I don't get any of the benefit. I'm losing on both ends. Maybe I'll just decide I don't want to have a website anymore. And if everyone decides that, if a lot of people who've been producing information decide that, then suddenly this thing that all the chatbots, let alone the rest of the world, has been relying on to give us often like incredible, important, entertaining information and content, like they could go away. It could be the kind of thing that, you know, like the thing that they've created kills the system that it actually needs to exist. I really wonder, like, what is going to happen? And we're already seeing this. You know, publishers have said since Google has put in its, like, AI mode, they've seen, like, a 70% drop-off in their search traffic. Like, that is happening right now where businesses are shutting down because they can't afford it. And then not only businesses, soon it'll just be anyone who wants to run a website. It just might not be worth it. And I think that we potentially could lose something that's great. And, look, you know, I think the advertising model gets a really bad rap. We talk about targeted advertising, we talk about spam ads, and I totally agree. It is like, it is in many ways a very unappealing system, but it's also like the least worst one we've got. There is a lot of stuff out there that we currently have access to that would blow people's minds because we occasionally look at an ad, because we occasionally see a pop-up or whatever, that I think is has really, really benefited the world in a lot of ways. I'm sure, like, I'll leave it to everyone else to run the numbers, whether it's worth it entirely or not. But fundamentally, there's a lot of stuff out there that's really great that we could lose because of this change that's happening so quick.
I think one of the most glaring examples of what we might lose in this, you know, pre-apocalyptic times that we're looking at with the internet here is Wikipedia, which has been such an incredible resource over the years. Yes, it started out as something that you would absolutely never cite as being a source, but now it's just become a fantastic place that collates all of this information, provides all of the sources. You've got all of the Wikipedia editors that are committing all of their valuable time. We find a lot of these aggregate sites, a lot of these places that are being mined by large language models for their data sets. And they're going to lose out in the long run unless we keep visiting them. And it's really sad. I feel like we're approaching the death of an era on the internet almost.
True, but we still will always have Grokopedia as well. So
we've got
the backup.
No. All right. Well, speaking of Grokopedia, I think leads me into my next question. Is there a story or a person that we paid a little bit too much attention to this year that we probably shouldn't have?
I think another thing that we've been paying way too much attention to this year is humanoid robots and the development thereof. I don't think that they've shown their potential. I think we've seen a lot more failures than we have seen successes at this yet. I don't know why we're continuing to pursue this as a species, why we need to replace ourselves with robots that do not walk as well, do not talk as well, and you need a person in the room controlling them and pretending to be, you know, the world's most advanced puppeteer. I think that it's a bit overdone and maybe we need a break.
Oh, look, I think we've all been brought a lot of joy by watching videos of humanoid robots fail at very basic tasks. How about you, Cam? Has there been a story that we've paid too much attention to this year, in your opinion?
Too much attention. I think, sports betting and the like real emergence of prediction markets as well, which is, I think, more or less the same thing in some cases. This is particularly like globally something that has made me just so uncomfortable. So for people not familiar, like obviously we have a lot of sports betting in Australia. It kind of went to the US more recently and when it was legalized in the late 2010s, but has like totally taken over things there. I think you see this real weird meshing in of cryptocurrency people who are kind of obsessed with, you know, financializing everything. It's intersected with sports betting, so people betting on everything, and these prediction markets, which are essentially a way often getting around sports betting regulation by saying, we're not actually betting on it. We're kind of, we're signing like a monetary contract through technology to the outcome of something that is often sports. So it is essentially the same kind of thing. Anyway, all of that is just something that I think that has gotten so much attention. There's so much money in it now. And I would just have to say that, like, you know, even putting the morals aside, I'm like, is it making all of our lives better? I don't really think so. I think it's immiserating a lot of people. I really think that it's something I feel uncomfortable about.
I think we're going to look back on a lot of gambling advertising and its integration into sports in particular in the same way that we look at tobacco and the role that it played, you know, back in the 80s and 90s. I think it's going to be a pretty shameful part of our history, if I'm honest. You are listening to Download This Show on ABC Radio National. Ray Johnston here with you, and I'm joined by Cam Wilson, Crikey's Associate Editor and writer of the Sizzle newsletter, and also Jennifer Dudley Nicholson, AAP reporter. And I want to hear about the joy that technology has brought to both of your lives this year. Jen, what's been your gadget or app or game of the year? What has made you smile this year?
Can I provide you with a list?
Yes. Yeah, rattle it off. Rattle it off.
Oh, I love this.
because I have a top pick, but it's really niche. And so to make up for that, I would say, first of all, colour ebook readers came out this year from both Kobo and Kindle, yes. And I freaking love them because I'm a nerd and that's what I do.
Love it.
And you can highlight in different colours, and for some reason that has changed my life.
Perfect.
Second of all, I would nominate, Samsung brought out the Fold 7, their latest folding phone, and it kind of lives up to what a folding phone should have been maybe seven generations ago. So it is actually thin and it doesn't seem like it's going to fall apart. And if it just had a pen where you could write on the front of it, then it would get top marks. But it's pretty close. We're getting pretty close.
Excellent.
Now, and here's my super niche pick.
Okay.
My super niche answer for all of the year. So I'm kind of obsessed with digital notebooks. Ooh. I have a lot, but maybe too many digital notebooks. And this year, a company called Remarkable that makes some very compelling notebooks brought out not only a color one, but like a reporter's style notebook that's quite small. It's way too expensive for what it is, but I love it anyway. It's called the Remarkable Paper Pro Move. I tell myself that I'm saving forests and I'm not buying as many notebooks as I would. I'd love to see someone do some research on, you know, how many notebooks it takes to make up for the fact that I'm continually buying these notebooks.
Jen, I love this recommendation so much. All of my targeted advertising is these Remarkable notebooks, and I always stare at it and go, I don't know, because I just use an iPad with the GoodNotes app, and, you know, to switch over to something that isn't multi-purpose, I can't seem to justify that in my brain. What about you, Cam? What tech has brought you joy this year?
As a typical early adopter of things, I've been quite late on smart home things. I haven't gone the whole hog. I haven't sat down and be like, how am I redesigning my house to do all this? I dipped my toe in. I got a few Wi-Fi plugs, which essentially just allows you to turn anything into something that you can turn on and off with your phone or other devices. Use those for lamps, then started using them for other things. And then more recently, I got a robot vacuum, which again is like quite an old, I mean, I guess Roombas have been around for a million years. I'm very, very late to it. But I have a dog who sheds, and it has just been a revelation. And it was like not that expensive. Like, I'm not going to say the brand because it's on the ABC, but it was a little bit more than $100 on sale. And it just like goes around and zzzz, and I hear that noise in the background. I'm just so happy because I'm like, I know that you've done something that I probably wasn't going to do anytime soon anyway. So I'm very, very grateful for it. And I got a little bit of emotional attachment to it because the other day it knocked over something onto itself and I came up the stairs and I saw it was trapped under and it had gone to sleep. And I was like, no, man down. But in just like a week or two, I've really like taken to it. So if you haven't done like any smart home things, I think it's worth just like getting a little thing or two, have an experiment. You don't need to change your whole house. You don't need to make a massive investment. I know you can, but there are just little things that you can do. And I'm feeling myself starting to get the taste for it. And so I'm imagining there'll be more to come if you check in with me next year.
As a super early adopter of smart home products, I feel such a strong, joyful maternal instinct towards you right now, Cam. That's, I brought over the Alexa from the States through one of those special services that send you products, even though they're not meant to, back in the day before it was released here. Had to change all the settings to make it think I was in Guam or something so that it would operate, and immediately never touched a light switch again. And it changed my life dramatically, and I love it so much. I think my main gripe with smart home products these days is that they want to integrate cameras into everything, and I'm not into the surveillance aspect of it. So as long as you keep it to just the Wi-Fi, the sensors, all of that sort of stuff, this is changing your life, Cam. I'm so happy for you.
And sometimes they come with the added benefit of knowing what the temperature is in Guam.
Right? Absolutely. You are listening to Download This Show on ABC Radio National. Ray Johnston here with you. I'm joined by Cam Wilson, Crikey's associate editor and the writer of the Sizzle newsletter, and also Jennifer Dudley Nicholson, AAP reporter, and we're about to predict the future. It's crystal ball time. Jen, 2026, where are we going to be this time next year? What's your predictions?
I predict we'll still be talking about AI. but in addition to that, there are a few other things on the horizon. So I think that we might be seeing some changes in streaming media services, given that two very large companies are currently fighting over Warner Brothers. So that'll be interesting to see how that plays out on our televisions. There's been talk of a Samsung tri-fold phone, which, again, sounds bonkers, so I'm into it. It could be terrible. It could be amazing. And I really want to see some more of this is not so much a prediction as a want, I suppose. But Anthropic this year came to a deal with authors for the use of their information, their manuscripts to train AI. And I'd love to see some more of that. I'd love to see some more of, you know, what the Australian government was talking about in terms of, you know, copyright regulations so that these books aren't, you know, ripped out of libraries and fed into the AI machine. And if they are mistakenly and accidentally, then maybe somebody gets paid for those, somebody who actually created them. So, yeah, that's what I'm hoping and predicting for 2026.
Brilliant. And what about yourself, Cam? What's your predictions for next year?
I'm going to go with a hopeful one. This is kind of wish casting. I really want to see tech companies have a little bit more shame about releasing products that they put out that don't work. This has been, I think, quite linked to AI because there's been so much buzz about it and people putting out things that aren't quite operational, AI devices that are broken. You know, Microsoft in particular, I think, is like, you know, they've recently put out all these AI integration stuff that just really does not work as they say it does. And I think it's embarrassing. And I think, like, while that is obviously linked to this AI stuff, it really fundamentally is actually not about it. It's about these companies have become so big that they are so ambitious and worried about anyone else having advantage over them that they'll just roll things out the door. But it's not a very good experience. Like, it isn't, like, a lot of these new things do not work that well. And I think that's really disappointing. Technology, when it works well, is so magic. And that's the thing that I always come back to.
I love that. 2026, the year of releasing products that actually work, that we enjoy using. I definitely want to see that. That is all the time we have on this episode of Download This Show. A big thank you to Cam Wilson. Where can people find you and your work?
No, just the internet. You'll find me if you want me.
You sound so exhausted. I'm so sorry. And Jennifer Dudley Nicholson, where can people find you and your work?
Yeah, the internet as well, but also aapnews.com.au. There's a whole bunch of stories written by me there too.
We will be back with more Download This Show in 2026, but in the meantime, we have a special summer series. You might be thinking about reducing your screen time over the summer break. You might even be thinking, can I escape from the internet altogether? So we've decided to research that. We've got a special series called Opt Out. It's the Download This Show guide to taking back control of your online life. And we will see you back here in 2026. For our regular Download This Show episodes. We'd also love to hear from you with anything that you would like us to cover on the program. You can reach me at Ray Johnston on Instagram, or you can leave a review on any of the podcasting platforms you use, including the details there, what you'd like to hear from us. You can also use the hashtag Download This Show on any social media platform and I will find you. Reach out. I'd love to hear from you. I'm Ray Johnston, and you've been listening to Download This Show on ABC Radio National.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.